Elizabeth Barrett is a wife, mother, grandmother, licensed marriage and family therapist, educator, eavesdropper, and emotion worker. She uses all of these skills to address the subjects that we grapple with in this conversation with the reluctant therapist. Happy Tuesday, Elizabeth.
Happy Tuesday, Tyler.
How are you today?
I am well, but I am grappling with my generational identification.
Okay.
Because if you, depending on which chart you look at or information, I am a cuspy Gen Xer or a very late stage boomer.
Uh-huh.
And depending on my mood or my company, I would like to put myself in one category or the other, because the Gen Xers, if you know anything about them, was the 70s apathetic students, which is very much my high school. We were this weird mix of super politically apathetic and not super academically geared, but amazing athletes who partied a lot, who were, you know, did well in the social world and had a mix of friends. Like the Gen Xers, I relate to that. We are the latchkey kids. So a lot of the kids from my generation, their parents got divorced. The highest rate of divorce happened in the late 70s. And so a lot of the kids I went to school with grew up latchkey kids where there was no child care after school then. So they would come home and watch TV and eat cereal. And those of us who had moms at home were so jealous because our friends went home and just, you know, watched TV and ate Captain Crunch. So I can relate very much to that Gen X experience. And the Gen Xers, you don't hear much about because for all intents and purposes, they've been completely overshadowed by the baby boomers, mm-hmm. who have dominated the cultural story for a very long time, since the 60s. And then there's the millennials who come after the Gen Xers.
And I would be elder millennial, I believe. I think I'm the first millennial.
So you're the top of the millennial chart. So you're not quite an Xer. So you're not of the apathetic.
Not quite an Xer, but I'm like the beginning, technically a millennial. And mm-hmm. I get a lot of that, like a lot of millennial, but also not
okay.
a lot of millennial. So
do you,
we're very
do you
different
relate than, either side? Like, do you relate to the stereotypical millennial traits of being a little snowflakey and sensitive? And
I grew up with technology happening with me, so yes. I'm used to it changing, but I didn't grow up expecting it. So that's the difference, I feel okay. like, with a lot of mine was like, we kept getting it. It kept changing with us and growing up, but I wasn't born just, you know,
with the screen.
With a screen at all. That's still
which
foreign.
Is the late yeah. millennials, and then totally. The newly minted Gen mm-hmm. Z that we see coming up. And what's interesting is that each generation has its own personality traits. You know, they have that thing they kind of become known for when you look back historically. You know, the greatest generation this is known for fighting World War II and getting us through the Depression. And there's a lot of dignity surrounding the greatest generation. And they, you know, set a very stoic pathway, which the boomers railed against, because the silent generation, which is my parents aren't technically greatest generation, they're more silent generation. So just by, you know, virtue of when we were born, my whole family are in-betweeners. My parents more the silent and I'm more the Xer, and my kids are in between millennials and Gen Z. So we're in-betweens. But the if you look at how generations kind of morph and then impact the cultural world, they each react to the other. So you saw this very stoic, you know, nose to the grindstone, pull yourself up by the bootstraps, follow, listen to authority, a lot of country pride, you know, pride for America, USA, getting through the Depression, getting through World War II. And then we go into the 50s where those who fought in World War II really felt like they had earned this. They had earned these suburban houses all in a row with the same hats and the same gloves that everyone wore and that single car garage, you know, that conformity that this generation felt like they'd fought hard for and wanted. They wanted peace. They wanted everything to just be nice. So it would make sense then that the teenagers who come up through this era of the 50s would look at this, what could be seen as beautiful, peaceful, bucolic lifestyle of the 50s as repressive and oppressive and full of bigotry and the segregation. Because if you weren't just part of the mass of same. If you were different, you were isolated, you were segregated, right? You were called out. So the 60s makes sense. Mm-hmm. It makes sense.
Rebellion.
The boomers who turned into boomers, they looked at this and they started a revolution because things did not go well for all people. They wanted to have more equality. They wanted to have more opportunities. And you know, I'm not telling you things we don't know, but I think it's important to understand how it ebbs and flows because
it's very funny though when you think about it. Because I think about like they were the rebellion and then they grew up and had kids.
Yes, and the kids kind of turned on them. But here's where things get different and interesting is that the boomers are schizophrenic because they start off as being, you know, the hippie movement and free love and environmentalists and, you know, income equality and the feminist movement. They're about that. But then they flip midway through their term and become the huge me generation capitalists. You know, it's all about the money, Wall Street, right? So they do something that no generation before them ever did, which was switch their personality. And then all of a sudden looked back and said, now we're in charge and let me tell you how it's going to be. And so then you would expect, okay, well, the boomers' kids then should turn on them just like they did to their parents and tell them that they're, you know, full of crap. But it doesn't happen because what happens socially is that the millennials of your generation, kind of the later end millennials and even middle millennials, have the closest relationships with their parents of any generation we've ever seen, where they consider their parents their best friends. And they moved back home after the economic downturn in 2008. And when you do therapy with these families, it's just all love and hugs. And my parents are phenomenal. And the boomers really gifted their millennials with wealth and opportunities and trips to Europe and study abroad.
Dreams
and all these things. And so that also was really strange. So what I find fascinating is now the millennials are flipping their personality switch halfway through and looking at their parent boomers and saying, okay, boomer, mm-hmm. or okay, mm-hmm. boomer, depending on how you hear it. It's like, we're tired of you being in charge. We're tired of your story. For a lot of millennials who kind of picked up the mantle of their parents' generation of, you know, working hard and buying into the corporate structure and, you know, being loyal to family and, you know, wanting to do better, they're finding that they're not getting the same opportunities that their parents had because the boomers aren't retiring. They're not moving aside. They're not making space for that next generation. And so the millennials, especially the later end millennials, are starting to tap their foot. It's like, you got to go. Because now you're in our way and you're old and you don't represent the values that we have and the list goes on and on. And so we get to the fall of 2019 and this meme pops up. And I know my daughter's going to call immediately and tell me that I'm using this incorrectly, but that's fine because I will be a boomer for this moment. A meme pops up that is, okay, boomer. Okay, boomer, however you want to say mm-hmm. it. But so you're familiar with this. For other people who might not be, you may not have seen this, but it was a meme, a catchphrase that popped into the public's mind's eye, and it hit social media so fast on a platform called TikTok. And if you don't know that, then you need to ask your grandchildren. but they're short.
I barely understand what TikTok is.
That's why I'm saying our grandchildren. but it's short videos, and a song was, you know, put together about okay, boomer, and it spread so quickly onto all these social media platforms, and then zoomed into the mainstream media, and New York Times wrote a big article about it in October, and then it was in, you know, Atlantic Monthly, and all of a sudden now you're seeing t-shirts and hats. It spread so fast, Tyler, that dictionary.com already has it in its on its website defining okay boomer as a slang phrase used to call out or dismiss out of touch or closed-minded opinions associated with the baby boomer generation or older people more generally. And so the phrase takes off, the idea takes off, and it becomes kind of this rallying cry of the later born millennials and the newly arriving Gen Z railing against what they see really as a generation that has stolen their future. The Greta Thunbergs of the Gen Zs who say, hey, you know, you've had it great. You've had a great run, but you need to move aside because you are leaving us with issues that you failed to address, like climate change and income disparities and inequality and rising inequality in the workplace and unaffordable college tuition and political polarization and, you know, all of these things that have kind of come to settle on their generation as the boomers kind of skip off into the future or into the history books, but not as quickly as people would have expected. And so some people see this okay boomer as the beginning of another movement, like we saw in the 60s, but not really like we saw in the 60s, because they're not, the Gen Zers really aren't a free love, birth control, you know, express yourself in nature generation. They're actually way more like the Gen Xers, my generation, the Clash, you know, X, Black Flag, punk rock, railing against the establishment. They're angry and they want to have their say. So I'm not sure what this is. I think the okay boomer, my kids would say, has already passed for them. And I don't know if it's really as much as the cultural conversation, but it brings up a few things. One is, what about those relationships between the millennials and their boomer parents that used to be really cozy and is not as cozy as it used to be? Or for the Gen X parents who raised kind of these rowdy Gen Zers, how is that relationship? And how is it for you? Because my relationship with my kids is certainly different than it was and is with my parents because of the generational expectations. So I guess what I'm curious to know today is, how are things going in your generational relationships? Are you copacetic? Are things going well? Or are you feeling that okay boomer divide that is so prevalent today because there is a future for the next generation that is terrifying for them and there doesn't seem to be much leadership addressing it? So we are going to open the phone lines today because I want to hear what you have to say about this. Our number is 805-781-3875. You can be a part of the conversation by calling in. If you're a little nervous to talk online, just talk to Tyler and he'll ask the question for you. You can also send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. Please follow us on Facebook and our Instagram, Elizabeth_TRT. My Gen Z daughter takes care of that social media platform of Instagram and keeps the pictures current, and you can leave messages there. So we'd love to hear from you. You are listening to A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. We'll be back to take your calls. And here's a little of that okay boomer. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist, and that's okay, boomer. I probably even said that wrong. I'm nervous doing this show because I feel like I'm stepping into a part of our current cultural conversation that really isn't mine to have. It's really the conversation of my students, and they're very much in the Gen Z world. And part of the reason that this conversation popped up for me is because every quarter I assign a technology fast for my students. I ask them to refrain from, you know, carrying their phones with them all day and using social media for 24 to 36 hours. And then they write about their experience. And I've been doing this for over a decade. So I've made this assignment for millennials and now for Gen Zers. And it's interesting to see how my students currently approach that assignment. And I get a sense that they look at me with a little bit of chagrin. They look at me like I'm out of touch a bit. How can you even ask us to do this? If I'm not on my phone, I don't exist socially. If I'm not, you know, in constant contact with my friends and my parents, then somehow those relationships start to deteriorate. You know, there's a really interesting sense of perspective that has emerged with this generation. And it's a mix of feeling closely tied to those they love, parents and friends and their social media contacts, and really needing to have affirmation of those relationships constantly. They also spend a lot of time reading and staying current with political events, more so than the generation before them, because their phone gives them such access to that. And they also see their phone as a comfort animal of some sort, that when they feel anxious or stressed or overwhelmed, it's a place that they can instantly turn to calm themselves. And so to be asked to separate from that device for any amount of time really feels like an affront. And so one of the articles I read about the OK Boomer movement was that it was kind of a generational eye roll in the form of virtual eye roll, right, in the form of the social media. And that really hits home generationally, because I can remember rolling my eyes every time my grandmother would start talking about her thoughts about the current music of the day, or how our relationships were, or how I wore my hair and that my amazing perm that I had in high school and college, when she talked about my clothes or my diet or what I ate, just all of it. And I would just roll my eyes and, okay, grandma, you know, okay, grandma. And then I can still catch myself doing it to my parents if they head on down a tangent that I'm just not really supportive of. And so there is a historical precedent of eye rolls generation to generation. And I guess my question today is, how do you experience that in your life? Do you feel like you're still current with the generation behind you? Or how do you feel about the generation above you? And what generation do you actually relate to? Because I feel like I'm a in-betweener. Our number is 805-781-3875. Hi, Sue, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you, Elizabeth?
I'm grappling, Sue.
I'm grappling too.
Tell me what's on your mind.
I have, I am right on the cusp too. I was born in 1965, of the boomer Gen X spot there. And I have a 20-year-old daughter who just today I was taking her to work, and we were talking about politics, of course, and comes up a lot in our house. Mm-hmm. And how her generation, she says, you know, we just don't care. Mm. We're angry. We're very angry about what's going on, but we feel powerless. And, you know, my suggestion was, well, there's lots of ways that you can support ideas that you believe in if you look for them. And I think that that's also a problem with her, is that she doesn't seek those things out. On the other hand, though, I really resonated with when you said that they were very angry. I also notice with my daughter and many of her friends that they have a similarity to my generation. We are very, very close. We have great communication. I have great communication with my parents, but nothing like I do with my daughter now. Mm-hmm. So that was really, and I don't know why. Maybe it's because I have no idea why. You're the expert on that. But anyway, I just wanted to say thank you for having this conversation, because I can't wait to share it with my daughter when she gets off work tonight, and hopefully give her some support, because I feel kind of hopeless sometimes with her.
Well, and I think the conversation you're having is a regular conversation between these two generations, because what do you offer up? You know, I think that's the difference between these two generational conversations and the conversation I had with my parents when I was growing up, because I remember saying to my dad, you know, Vietnam scares me, and, you know, I feel worried about my friends that are going to be drafted. And I was young, you know, I was only 10 or 11, but it felt like it was going to go on forever. And it changed how we saw everything. The distrust in government really kind of kicked off for our generation, correct?
Correct.
But we weren't having conversations about climate change and global destruction and the end of our two-party system. You know, the things that I remember worrying about and coming to my dad to, in the scheme of things, were workable. And he would always just say, well, that's for you guys to figure out. You'll make better what we did. But I don't know if that's the truth anymore. And I think that in lies the biggest problem, is that our kids are still really dependent on us, unlike we were with our parents, where we kind of broke free and set out into the world to make things better. But our kids are looking around and saying, I need to hang on to you because I don't see where I go from here. And I think that's to me what's heartbreaking, is that our kids are extra connected to us, which I love that I'm close to my girls, but I wish it was because they just like hanging out and not because there is this anxiety of not sure that they can be okay on their own or even afford it.
I totally concur with that. And even this morning, my daughter needed to make a doctor's appointment, for example, and she doesn't know how to work the system in being patient and staying on the line and having her phone there and waiting for the call back. And she got very frustrated. And so guess who stepped in to do it? I did.
Yes.
And she wants to move out this summer. And I said, Chloe, you are going to have to learn how to advocate for yourself and do these things for yourself. What are you going to do when I'm not around?
And I think
and it's a hard conversation to have because, you know, she ends up in tears and I feel bad. And
and again, I'm so glad you called too, because you're touching on so many of the dilemmas for parents of this generation, of your generation and mine. My kids are a bit older, but in our efforts to have a different relationship with our kids than we did with our parents, in some ways we have prevented them from breaking out, because our generation couldn't wait to leave home and my parents couldn't wait for me to leave home. They actually gave me luggage as my graduation gift from high school, and that's the truth. But we have a different relationship with our kids, and in some ways we have hindered their ability to take off. So it's twofold. We've held them back because we like their company, and we also have led them to a future that's super uncertain. And so as parents, part of our job is to close our eyes and push them out of the nest and let them figure it out. And that's terrifying because we're not so sure about what we're kicking them out into the world to. And that's where our generation is different than my parents. So Sue, thank you for calling.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. And Dave, are you there?
Yes.
Hi, thanks for waiting. What's on your mind? Did I lose Dave? Dave is not there right now. So Dave, you hang on and let's try. Kevin, are you there?
Yes, hello.
Hi. Kevin, what's on your mind today?
I just wanted to give a little feedback as a cusper myself, being between Gen Z and Millennial.
Please do.
Yeah, so first of all, yes, you are
my definition of tough love, and also,
Kevin, are you still there? Kevin, are you still there? We've got three phones going at once. I'm going to put everyone on hold. All right, Tyler, I'm counting on you to point to which line I should go to.
Hello.
Dave, are you there? Hi, Dave. I'm sorry. This has just been a phone fiesta. Let's start your conversation. Thanks for calling in. And Kevin, please call back. Dave, what's on your mind? Dave, what's on your mind? I don't know what is going on, Tyler. Okay, Dave, please call back and we will get to you. Dave, are you there? All right, so if Dave and Kevin will call back, we are having a phone fiesta today. And I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. Rolling with it today, talking about generations and the generational differences that we experience. Because each generation responds to the generation ahead of them as they move forward, but they also are responding to what's happening culturally, socially, politically in the world. And that impacts how our generation moves forward. So for the greatest generation, I don't think it was ever their intention to be the greatest generation, but they were faced politically and socially with the Depression and then World War II. And as a result, they were thrust into this position as a generation to go to war and to kind of rebuild our society in such a way that we moved forward into suburbs and homogeny and a lot of the 1950s experiences. And then it makes sense that for the 1950s kids graduating from high school, they're moving into a culture that's rapidly changing with the civil rights movement and the budding environmental movements. And they responded in kind. So I guess another part of the question is, for me, do we push forward the political social story, or do we respond to the political social story? What is it that actually drives our behavior as a generational cohort? So for the Gen Zs today, are they creating their story, the okay boomer, and, you know, pushing this anger at the older generations, or are they just responding to the reality socially, politically, environmentally that they've been born into? 805-781-3875 is the number to be part of our conversation. All right, let's try Kevin. Are you there?
Hi, hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Thank you for being so patient. Now let's make this work. Tell me what's on your mind today, Kevin, because you're my cuspy between Gen Zs and millennial, yes?
Yeah, that's right.
All right, so what sticks out for you today?
Well, I'd just like to begin first to say that, yes, you are saying okay, boomer, correctly.
Thank you.
Don't worry about that.
I appreciate it.
Yeah, but the other bit is that I feel like okay, boomer encapsulates both this idea of this generational eye roll that you mentioned earlier, but mm-hmm. also like a frustrated sigh at the situation that we're being put into. As we're growing up, I personally am about 20 years old and I go to Cuesta.
Okay.
And I feel like we have a really large mantle to deal with growing up. And as we finally enter the political arena as we go forward, but I feel like a lot of us are also grateful to the boomer generation and the Gen X generation just for, you know, laying the groundwork for what a political movement is. But I feel like the biggest obstacle to my generation is just learning actually how to become politically active. Mm. You know, the Democrats and the RNC and everyone have been talking about how there's like almost no voter turnout for people under the age of 25. Mm-hmm. consistently. Mm-hmm. And I feel like if we turned out a lot for this coming election, whether it's presidential, gubernatorial, whatever it is, I feel like we can make a large difference. But the problem is a lot of us are politically apathetic, which is kind of sad to me.
Mm-hmm. Well, and part of it, I think, Kevin, is that we stopped teaching civics and government across the board in high schools unless you take an AP class. So
yeah,
how
exactly.
do we expect your generation to learn about the voting process or to be educated if we're not teaching that in school as just a matter of course?
Yeah, exactly. I totally agree with that. I even took AP U.S. History and then Government and Civics in senior year. Not in the same year, but... And I still don't know what a caucus is. Mm-hmm. I mean, I should.
I don't think Iowa knows anymore.
I still don't know what a caucus is.
Yeah.
It's just crazy. I feel like we don't have enough. We just don't know enough to really make a difference, except for the fact that we are, as you've mentioned before, kind of masters of social media, whether or not it's good or bad for us. And I feel like if we could use that, maybe that could help us form a political identity outside of TikTok memes about okay boomer, you know?
Well, and I'm so glad you brought that up because it's something I hammer into my students that numerically there are more of you, the late millennials and early Gen Zers, than boomers. So you have the numbers and you have the access to social media. And if you were able to blow up TikTok with okay boomer, then yes, it only takes 20% of the population changing its mind about something to change an entire social norm. So when you're so it's not that many. And it is just one viral video that kind of changes the direction. So are you hopeful for your future? Because I wonder how that plays into it as well. You know, you have to feel hopeful for your future to want to get politically engaged.
Well, I don't know. I'd actually argue against that. You could also feel pretty desperate about your future to become very politically engaged, right?
Good point.
But I feel kind of mixed about it because, yes, I feel hopeful that we have this platform that is kind of our own, you know, being the iPhone generation for the Gen Zs or being on, you know, young professionals in the workforce. I feel like we could all get together and then come to some kind of political decision outside of letting other generations do it. But I also feel that right now, the younger half of the generation, again, I'm on the cusp, right? I feel like a lot of us still don't want to grow up yet, and we're scared to grow up because we know of all the things that are coming. Mm-hmm. If you ask any teenager nowadays, I guarantee you, they'll roll your eyes if you talk to them about climate change, and then they'll probably say something offhand about Greta Thunberg or something else. But deep down, they are very concerned about it. I know that I'm very concerned about it, and that's just on climate change. We aren't talking about political processes. We're educating our younger generations on civics and voting and all of that. Mm-hmm. It's just that we haven't really breached this veil of the generation being really coming into their own and realizing that, hey, I should really do something about this, and it's not something I can wait on anymore.
So maybe
a lot of us... Go on.
Well, I was just saying, maybe what you said is correct. Maybe you're not uncomfortable enough to come together and act on something. Maybe because you get to stay at home, you know, and you get along with your parents and things are kind of comfortable and you all have an iPhone, that it's not uncomfortable enough to warrant change. Maybe as parents, we need to boot all of you out into the world and say, fend for yourself. And maybe that becomes the inspiration of change.
Right. So I was reading something, I wish I knew the source, the other day, and they said that a lot of the younger generation, on the cusp, so Gen Zs, a lot of parents, regardless of their generation, whether it's Gen X, boomer, early boomer, they're actually really scared to let their kids go out into the great unknown because, you know, just 10 years ago was the Great Recession, and it was just ridiculous for all of America, and I feel like people are still very scared to let go of their kids into that great unknown, especially with all this talk about rising college costs. I mean, here in California, our cost of living is already astronomical. Yeah. I feel like we are getting sheltered a little too much and that both the parent and the child are getting anxious about the situation where the parent knows, okay, well, I should really let you go now, but I'm scared to. And I feel like the younger kids are also thinking, yeah, I'd like to be let go now, too, but I don't know if I can make it on by myself.
It's comfortable, now. Yeah. I appreciate you calling in, and I love your perspective, and I hope that you'll call again or send me an email because maybe you need to come on the air and share a little more of your wisdom, Kevin, because I really I value what you're saying, and I think it also speaks to what a lot of other people are experiencing because it is a dilemma. As parents, do I knowingly want to set my kid out into the world to struggle when I can keep them comfortable at home? But in the back of my mind, I know my kids need to struggle or they're never going to have an experience that is their own. Thanks for calling, Kevin. Our number is 805-781-3875. Dave, are you there?
Yes.
We finally touched base. And I'd love to hear what's on your mind today.
Well, I missed some of the opening of the show, so you may have already touched on this.
That's okay. Revisit.
The term, you know, tough love, I've heard, and I don't know if there's kind of an objective general understanding of what that is. Also the term of sort of failure to launch that I've had, you know, friends, family, friends of friends use. And I'd just like to hear your thoughts on, you know, kind of what tough love is in a general sense and how that might, you know, sort of play into, you know, the differences between the generations. Obviously, each generation has its challenges and it seems that things become more complex for each generation, but if you can sort of isolate that sort of that tough love factor and maybe comment on that.
Thank you, Dave. Can I ask you which generation you identify with?
Well, I was born in 1960.
Okay, so you could be a cuspy or tail end of the boomers.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, so, you know, it's tough love and failure to launch are very much the bootstrap mentality of parenting, where, you know, and it's also part of our cultural story as Americans that everyone has an opportunity to, you know, pull themselves up by their bootstraps, go out into the world and make a name for themselves. That is kind of our cultural mission. And interestingly enough, after the Greatest Generation, the next generation, the boomers especially, didn't want things to be as hard for their kids as that had been for them, or they felt had been for them. And so they took the wealth that they had and the comfort that they had and said, I'm going to make my child's life really comfortable so they don't suffer. The bummer is, the self-esteem movement, this idea that everyone gets a trophy and no one ever gets hurt and everyone is happy, has backfired in some ways, because we do see a generation, a certain segment of our population of young people who are not incredibly resilient, who are fairly emotionally fragile, have been diagnosed with disorders at a young age that have caused them to feel, you know, broken in some ways. And so the default then is we need to now apply tough love. We need to, you know, kick these kids out and make them, you know, struggle and get up on their feet. But in some ways we've created this problem, and now we're expecting to just ignore it by kicking the kids out and saying, now figure it out. And it's tough. But as I've said to Kevin and I was talking to my first caller, the necessity of a generation stepping aside and making space for the upcoming generation is critical for the next generation to be able to thrive and find their way. And that's one of the sticky points right now is, you know, baby boomers are living a really long time and they're not retiring and they're not moving aside and making space in the workplace for the upcoming millennials. So it's tough to say to the millennials, you need to work harder, right? You need to get out there and make something of yourself. But where do they go? They're considered flaky if they change jobs a lot, but they're not getting opportunities to grow in the positions they're in. So a lot of the views we have of the younger generation are our own creation, because we failed to give them the space to fail when they were young. And now we're expecting them to be tougher than they were when they were younger, but without the opportunities. Does that make sense?
Yeah. No, yeah, that makes sense. And I have friends who have, you know, children in their mid-teens, late teens that are really having troubles. I'd also like to hear your opinion on, you know, the boomers or any parents that really want to provide a lot for their children, you know, serving them breakfast or helping them with their homework or not allowing them to fail. I mean, really, I do wonder sometimes how much of that is for the parents. Either in their eyes, they want to view themselves as a great parent, or maybe amongst their peers, they want to be seen as a great parent. And perhaps some of that is more for the parent than the child. I mean, have you seen that or experienced that?
Yeah, and Dave, I'm going to let you go, but I will answer your question because it's appropriate to what we see happen generation to generation is what our parenting style looks like with each passing of the decades. And we are on the end of, you know, we're kind of in between, we're cuspy between this indulgent parenting style, which was a good parent provides everything for their child from camp to, you know, Air Jordans to all the greatest comforts that they could have and vacations. And then this kind of free range parenting, which is the children of the Gen X that are saying, I want my kids to have experiences out in nature and not be dependent on me and not be so materialistically bound. We see our parenting style change with each generation. And part of the struggle, again, is that it was very popular to be an indulgent parent through the 80s and most of the 90s and early 2000s. And it had its benefits, but it also had its unintended consequences that we see in this generation who's now trying to figure it out as parents themselves. Unfortunately, nothing is easy and clear cut, and that's what makes conversations so fun. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist, and we're talking about generational, intergenerational antagonism brought on by the meme, Okay, Boomer, and how each generation has had its own antagonistic, angry feelings towards a generation ahead of them. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. Tyler, let's hear a little bit of that 1970s teenage angst. Trying to forget your generation. We use an analog. That's your generation, a song from the late 1970s, that Gen X music of apathy and railing against the man. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and our number is 805-781-3875. Hi, Trish. Thanks for waiting. What's on your mind today?
Hi, Elizabeth.
Hello.
This is a really great topic, and I just wanted to get back to what you were saying in the beginning about the younger generation, not being able to come into the workforce. And I am recently retired, and one of the reasons that I retired was because I felt that it was getting harder and harder to become relevant with the kids. I was having to work harder and harder. I was, you know, listening to music that I didn't necessarily want to listen to so that I could relate to my students, and trying to stay up on social media. And I just was kind of, I was getting a little over it, and thought that this is just a good time for someone younger to come in and do what I'm doing. So I retired, and what was interesting is my students, I taught middle school, and, you know, they never changed age. They were always 12 and 13. So when I started teaching at 30, that was okay. That was pretty close. But the older I got, they never aged with me.
Yes.
So it, like with my children, they age along with me in some respect. And so it's easier for me to have a growing relationship with my own children as they get older than it was with the students. So I was happy to give it up and let somebody a little younger take it on.
Well, and I appreciate that, because I have that conversation with my students as well, especially with the Tech Fast paper that I talked about, and asking them to refrain from social media. And I say to them, you know, every year you're farther away from me, and that staying relevant and having, you know, something to share, it becomes really challenging. But one of the things that I always fall back on is this idea that, you know, if our students don't have, and not just our students, but if our children don't have a context for the way things used to be, and they just move forward into this kind of new world without any sort of information about what they're letting go of, then someone has to be the history keeper of those things that were let go of, just in case the path everyone marched down isn't really in their best interest. And I think that's what's a challenge in intergenerational relationships, because what is it that's a value of the older generation that we really want to make sure gets passed along, and what can be kind of set a sail and moved aside? And I think that is a challenge. Thanks for calling, Trish, and thank you for all of your years of teaching. Sandra, you're on the air. What's on your mind today?
Hi.
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing well.
So my what I wanted to add is that what we are not talking about is that millennials are a generation based on feelings. The parents raised them on, you know, about their feelings. Oh, let's not hurt your feelings. And so they raised them in a way that when they grew up and they went out into the real world and their feelings got hurt, they fell apart. Mm-hmm. For instance, you know, their candidate didn't win, then they cry. And how could that happen? Like, I voted for this person. And it's like, oh, my God, what happened? And, you know, there were a generation that the parents did everything for them, and they didn't allow them to fail as children. And so as a result, as adults, they're failing. And, you know, they're just hanging on to mom and dad because they just can't go out. They don't feel like they can go out.
Well, and it is interesting that you touched on the feelings, because the parenting style of the millennials was very much a result of the feelings generation of Virginia Satir of the 1960s, 1970s that their parents had grown up with, that they wanted to pass on to their children. And, mm-hmm. you know, so it really, again, it isn't on the millennial generation. It's kind of on what was seen as the parenting model. We wanted to have nonviolent communication. We wanted children to feel like they mattered. And it was the self-esteem movement. So the intention was there. The execution kind of got lost in some ways. But the piece of the millennials, and I don't want to, that's important, and it's not all millennials and the Gen Zs, but What we don't talk about quite often is the millennials are incredibly successful. The millennials and the Gen Zs are the most highly educated generations we've ever raised. They're the most well-traveled. They're very volunteer-oriented. They volunteer more than any other generation besides the greatest generation. They right. have long-term relationships. Their marriages are actually lasting longer than their parents' generation of marriages. So they're committed to long-term relationships. There's a lot of positives that don't get talked.
Absolutely, but there is also a lot of entitlement. You know, they come into the job, of course, with this super high expectations. Like, you know, you're going to be the boss, you know, after a month of being hired. Or like, you know, they're not. Again, it goes because they were raised as you are the best.
Yes.
And I have heard of fire departments having to do, you know, they having to deprogram their new hirees, their new cadets, essentially because, you know, they come in with the attitude like, I graduated, now I should be captain. And it's like, no, buddy, you're going to have to wait and really learn this, gain some experience. And it's the same thing with they come in and they want a raise after a month. And it's like they're not even, you know, you can't blame them. But at the same time, it's the sense of entitlement that I think really puts off the older generations. And they just see the older generations as uninformed, old-fashioned dinosaurs, and they don't really know the world. They're not enlightened.
Yes. And it is every generation kind of looks back and feels that way about the generation ahead of them. And I guess we're mm-hmm. always trying to correct the errors that we made. Because I would wonder, you know, if my parents' generation might look and say, well, you know, maybe we're kind of hard on those Gen X kids. And, you know, maybe we should have worried a little bit more about feelings and not, you know, kicked them out the door so quick. And then I think it's always in hindsight that we want to make corrections. And I appreciate what you said about the expectations of the millennials, because they are the most highly educated, you know, generation. And so you can see why they would look around and say, hey, I have a master's degree and none of my bosses do. And so that must give me some sort of edge because I was told that it would. So the messages that they're getting are complex. And I guess just right. you and I having this conversation, you know, highlights how challenging that generational divide can be, because nothing is all good or all bad in life. Everything comes right. at some sort of cost or balance. And I also, as we were talking about the Gen Z's future and part of the rallying cry against this, okay, boomer, you know, you've had your time, now move aside, is that they feel like they've been dumped in their lap, you know, a lot of messes that they're going to have to clean up, which are overwhelming. But then, you know, if you look back a few generations, you would say the same thing about, you know, post-atomic bomb baby boomers saying, well, you know, you've left us with nuclear destruction and the atomic clock that's going to go off at any moment. So why should we care? And why should we get involved? And so I think there has been this moment of end of the world feeling that many generations have experienced, and how they've responded to it has been what's made us who we are.
Right.
Yeah.
I think that psychologists, no offense to you, but I think psychologists have had a lot of influence on parenting, you know, how we raise our children. And I think to a certain degree, I think that they're great theories, but I think that there are many times when these psychologists become the experts on parenting. And if you do this, ooh, that's bad. You're a bad parent. And how dare you do that? And, you know, maybe there has to be a balance on how we raise our children. And maybe you do need to, you know, allow your kid to fail. And, you know, maybe it's okay to tell them, you know what, you have to let them fail. Mm-hmm. And, you know, otherwise they grow up and, you know, then they throw these big tantrums and they put on their masks and go, you know, go whack people because things didn't go their way. And, you know, it's outrageous. And it's got to stop. Otherwise, you know, our country is doomed if that trend continues, I have to say.
And if things follow in course, and Sandra, thank you for calling. I appreciate it. But if things follow in course, I would expect that the Gen Z are going to be the hardcore parents that are going to be about free range kids and letting their children fail. Because I would imagine that the Gen Zs and many of the millennials are going to look back and say, oh, my parents, You know, they just coddled me too much. That helicopter was just too much. They needed to let me go. You know, they didn't allow me to fail. And so I would imagine if things were going to play out as they have generationally, that this generation will probably be the ones that say, hey, you need to toughen up. We might see tough love come back into the vernacular in a strong way, because the millennials and Gen Z parents are going to say, with climate change the way it is, you're going to have to toughen up. You can't just lay around and expect things to come to you. And the way the job market is, you're not going to be able to just float into a corporate job. You're going to have to be an entrepreneur, because only entrepreneurs are going to be able to make a living. Like, I think that we are going to see that shift. And if history goes the way it has, that's what we'll see with these kids. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. Our number is 805-781-3875. And I brought up at the beginning of the show this meme or catchphrase, okay, boomer, which came into the social consciousness in the fall and kind of into the turn of the new year. And it started as a rallying cry for these Gen Zs and late millennials who are looking at the generation ahead of them and saying, you know what, you've had your time. It's time to move over. You are, you know, out of touch and old fashioned and leaving us with a future that's going to be impossible to navigate. And so we're tired of having you lecture us. We're tired of having you tell us that we're entitled, or that we're slackers, or that we're not trying hard enough, or that we're, you know, glued to our screens all the time. And part of the Gen Z rallying cry, and it actually came up in class yesterday, a couple of my students said, you know, my parents are on their phones more than I am. My parents have a social media addiction. I'm kind of over it. I stopped doing Instagram, or I stopped looking at Facebook, but my parents are the ones that I have to tell them, hey, mom, I'm telling you a story, put it down. So this idea that, you know, the Gen Zs are the screen problems, maybe it's not just about their issues, but it really is about their experience of culture overall. And they're looking at their parents and saying, hey, mom, dad, you need to let me go. You needed to force me to get a driver's license when I turned 16. You know, you needed to have confidence that I am capable of surviving. And even if you didn't think I was capable, give me a shot so that I can fail, and then you can help me find my way. What do you think about that? 805-781-3875. You know, Tyler, we just took off in the show, but I didn't get a chance to really hear your thoughts on this. Do you feel targeted as a millennial when people say you're expecting too much?
No, I mean, again, I'm on the older side, so I think that we picked up, I don't want to generalize, but I do think that we picked up on the older side of millennials, the people I grew up with, a little bit more of the, I wouldn't say apathetic, but we just kind of grew up with things and were more tolerating. And then the phone's ringing, so I'm going to grab it. But okay. I did have a point that I wanted to add here. So I do understand a lot of the, I'm never going to be able to have the same kind of parent, the house that my parents had. You know what True. I mean? And some of those things. So that does really stick really hard with me. You know, it's like, I'm lucky if I live, you know, I'm single. So if I get a studio apartment that I can afford, you know?
Well, I'm so glad you brought that up, because that is one of the statistics that we don't really address, is that the later in millennials and the Gen Zs are going to be the first generations that don't have the same quality of life as their parents. And that's across socioeconomic boards, boundaries. So if you're in the lower end of the socioeconomic ladder, your children are going to fare even worse than you feel you have, and for the middle class. And so that is something that is unprecedented, but in some ways not completely without historical context, because those people that came of age right at the beginning of the Depression, if you were 16, 17, 18 when the Depression hit, you were not going to live at the standards that your parents did at all. And it took, you know, if it weren't for World War II, much of that generation would have never recovered. Because the Depression wiped out industries, it wiped out farming, and it wiped out opportunities. What saved them, unfortunately, was World War II, because then with the VA bill and all the building after the war, that generation was saved in some way.
And I'll add here that also in my thought process that I'm actually not upset about that. The sort of life that when I talk about difference of parents, that sort of thing doesn't appeal to me as much. The large house, the multiple
garage.
Your values
are different.
My values are different. And I see that in a lot of my friends, is that, you know, I'm happy with actually the studio. I care more about experiences and different things that's generational. So, but I think that is part of the difference, is understanding that our values are different, and that's okay.
Yeah, that is true, that the values do change. And so for parents, if their child didn't aspire to get the big house and they somehow as parents have failed, but instead maybe that's exactly what your parents wanted, was for you to value experiences and time with your family and time with your, you know, friends to be more important than just kind of this single-minded Puritan work ethic. It's all about making money. You know, maybe in hindsight, we've done a fabulous job as parents in the last few generations because we've prepared our children in some ways to really value the simpler things in life, because maybe those simpler things are going to be all that's available. And at the end of our lives, it'll be the things that we really remembered and really cared about, which are the people we're close to. And I love my relationship with my daughters, and it is much closer than probably a lot of, you know, my parents' generation would think is healthy. They would wonder, why do you spend so much time with them? But I've raised people that I enjoy being with, and I know that that's true for a lot of my friends. But at the same time, I hope that I've given them an opportunity to fail enough that they'll have some resilience in the world as their lives become more complex. So those are my thoughts. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this has been A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. You can listen to previous shows at kcbx.org, or you can podcast our show by listening to or finding Apple Podcasts. Look for A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. Hit subscribe, and our show will be available for your convenience. You can call me. You can send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com, and you can listen to us every Tuesday at 2. You are part of our community, and I appreciate supporting Central Coast Public Radio KCBX. I leave you with the quintessential generational angst song, The Who.
People try to put us to death,
talking about my generation,
just because we get around,
talking about my generation.
Things they do look awful,
talking about my generation.
Forget
all. Talking about my generation.
To my generation, baby. Why don't you all fade away? Don't try and dig what we all say. I'm not trying to cause a big sensation. I'm just talking about my generation. Generation.
People try to put us to death,
just because we could get around.